Hello and welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm your host, Tracy Peake. Manuscripts from the Middle Ages give us a window into the minds of people who lived long ago. But the manuscript pages themselves, and the DNA on them, could give us even more insight into that time period. Tim Stinson is an associate professor of English at NC State who is bringing the Middle Ages into the digital age through DNA analysis of medieval parchment. Thanks for being here, Tim.
Thanks for inviting me.
So let's get started with how in the world did you ever get the idea for looking at the DNA on the pages of these medieval manuscripts?
Well, like most folks who end up being English professors, in my graduate training, I was, of course, taught mainly to think about text, right? I was reading medieval text, reading text about medieval text, and so forth. And typically, we encounter medieval text, of course, in modern printed editions of them. But, of course, the original sources were all manuscripts. These were hand-copied books. The entire period falls before the advent of printing. I was looking at all the versions I could of a single poem, the witnesses of it. That's what we call the original manuscript copies. We call those witnesses to the text, right? And so when I got there and I ordered up my first round of manuscripts, I was sitting there with anticipation, and they're delivered to me. I thought, oh wow, this is incredible. I was immediately fascinated by the thing itself, the book itself. You know, of course, I was still interested in the text, but from that moment forward, I was really wanting to know about this book itself, right? Where did this thing come from? Who's had it in their hands? Who copied it? What's its sort of life? You know, this is an artifact that has a sort of active 600, 700 year history behind it. And so my initial idea about the DNA came because, you know, here I'm handed this artifact and I'm immediately struck by the animal nature of these books, if you would, right? So this is animal skin that has been specially treated to prepare a writing surface. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if you go across campus and ask someone, how old is this book or where did it come from? They're going to approach that question, particularly a biologist is going to approach that question from a very, very different vantage point. So that was sort of the light bulb moment for me, is to say, well, whom could I ask about this? What are the other sorts of approaches to answering the questions that I came here to answer?
So from there, you decided to kind of approach a biologist or a geneticist? Like, how did you go about getting this done?
Well, I'm quite lucky because my brother's a biologist. And so the first thing I did was I wrote to him and said, do you think that maybe DNA could survive the manufacturing process? Could it survive in time that long? Has it degraded? And so I sent him a little bit of information about exactly how parchment was made. And he said, you know, yeah, I think probably it could. We quickly took a look at what was happening out there. And sure enough, people are extracting it from things even older than medieval parchment.
And so now you know that this is possible. What, you know, how do you get a sample of a medieval manuscript to work with?
Now we tend to use either vinyl erasers, like the sort of white blocky erasers you see, little slices of those. If you simply rub it on the parchment, it picks up cells, picks up collagen. And you can use the eraser rubbings themselves to test either the collagen or the DNA. And that's minimally invasive, right? It's actually something that conservation scientists themselves use to clean manuscripts, so it's very safe. The other thing we use, a technique that I developed here with some of the folks in animal sciences at NC State, is to use cell cytology brushes. So those are what we do now. And you also asked about the history, right? What did I do in the past? The very first thing I did was there's lots of individual pages or leaves, as we call them, of medieval manuscripts floating around on the market. You can buy them lots on eBay and things like that. So the first thing I did was get some of those leaves, individual leaves, and sort of abraded the surface on both sides and cut the center out of a little spot in the margin and sent that off to be tested. But there was a long history of my work on this where what I was doing was simply trying to develop a technique that was minimally destructive or non-destructive, right? So that was sort of a long phase of the project, just simply testing different techniques. Do I get the same result doing this as I did doing destructive testing, back and forth, back and forth?
So just getting the DNA was a huge challenge.
Right.
Now you have the DNA. What are you getting from these, you know, samples and rubbings that you're taking? And what is it telling us?
Right. Well, the project is still fairly young. It's fairly early. So we're not far in time past that point of, you know, actually working on the problem of how to get good samples. So we've done a lot more work recently with collagen, where we're looking at the structural proteins and we're identifying species and their distribution across books. And we've proven we can get DNA, but to date, no one has sampled, say, an entire book, right? That's something that we actually have an ongoing project to do. And I can tell you a bit about that, what we're doing right at this moment, and we're looking for the outcome. So I'm working with two colleagues from the Folger Shakespeare Library, Heather Wolf and Michael Whitmore. And so what we're positing is that if you look at a culture that you know is sort of literally insular, right? Think about early medieval monks in England. They're on an island. They've withdrawn from life. These are also the only folks, almost the only folks, who are producing books who read and write at this point in history. They're raising herd animals, so they're making their own parchment. So we would hypothesize that that sort of cultural insularity would be reflected in a sort of genetic homogeneity in the parchment. That is, you would think that it would also be reflected in local herds and in the book production. If you fast forward a few centuries and you look at sort of very late medieval or early modern humanist manuscript culture, sort of that manuscript culture that comes after the period of printing, say somewhere like London or Venice or a city like that, we would fully expect in this very cosmopolitan, certainly not insular cultural world, that we would see that lack of insularity reflected in sort of very heterogeneous skins coming from all over as a part of a commercial sort of perhaps international trade. Again, that's a kind of rough notion of what we have about how those cultures were and how the production of parchment was, but we don't really know that for sure. So what we're saying is we hypothesize that we could show this cultural insularity reflected in a sort of, as it were, genetic insularity amongst herd animals, right?
So, in other words, by examining the DNA of these manuscripts in different time periods, like the ones that we know were produced in a monastery.
Right.
The DNA from those pages or leaves should be all from the same herd. Like, you should be able to trace that. This came from sheep that are related to each other or cows that are related to each other. Versus later, when you know you have trade coming in from overseas and all different places, these leaves are going to have genetically dissimilar origins.
That's what we had guessed. And we know also that by the end of the medieval period, say from the 13th century forward, it was increasingly common even for monks to hire out their work to professional scribes. So we know at some point that turned, right? And that writing, copying manuscripts became a sort of increasingly commercial production, even if certain monasteries continued to copy and produce their own parchment. But in between those two is a story where we have a rough sense of a change happening, not very good, clear historical documents that say this is exactly what parchment trade was like and when this changed. And so we could begin to map the interim, right? When and where did these sorts of changes happen? And of course, this speaks not only to literary production, but to animal husbandry questions and issues of medieval trade, things that we often don't have a lot of good data.
So it could give you a bigger picture of what was going on.
Exactly.
When these cultures started reaching out to one another and trading with one another.
Correct.
Now, you could look at these leaves and maybe get some genetic information about the animals that they were made from. Is there any way possible to get any genetic leavings of the monks themselves?
There is. In fact, that's kind of the next generation of sequencing, and it's probably where we're all headed. A real eye-opener for me in working with the scientists has been that they're looking at sequencing everything at once. That is, you know, all the animal DNA, all the human DNA, all the sort of what they're calling the microbiome of the book, and thinking about it that way. So there are things like, you know, bacteria commonly associated with humans that's there. I've heard some folks say they're finding mouse DNA, which makes sense. You know, you think about,
right,
you know, you have a medieval library, early modern library, all the centuries these books have been kept, that mice are going to be in and out of there. You know, there's also, of course, non-mammal DNA of all sorts, right? There's all sorts of plant material in these books, spores, things like that. So, as I said, it's eye-opening for me. I was thinking, wow, there's kind of this little genetic universe inside of each one of these books that we could begin to map.
What do you see as the future of this work? What impacts do you think it can have beyond just literature, just telling us more about how these folks went about creating these manuscripts? What can it tell us about maybe other fields or do to help us sort of better understand not just the Middle Ages, but maybe other time periods as well?
Right. Well, I think that's a very exciting frontier, and there are a lot of individual fields that could benefit from this. One is if we want to think about animal science or the history of sort of human-animal interaction in an agricultural setting. One of the things is that we have this completely unparalleled faunal record in parchment. It's sitting in libraries all over Europe. There are over a million manuscript books, and then beyond that, so many single documents, things like leases, wills, every legal document, court records, you know, town records, business records, everything was on parchment. And much of this stuff is localized. You know, it's when people do those sorts of documents, they sign it, they date it, and they tell you where they are. And this is amazing that we have this record that until very recently, no archaeologists are looking at it as faunal remains, right? As a year-by-year slice of animal husbandry, the history of animal husbandry for all of medieval Europe. That's incredible, right? And it's just been sitting there in the library unexamined as kind of scientific data, right? It's always thought of as textual data. There's also a history of trade, right? When and where did things sort of stay local? When and where did they begin to move? So I think there are all sorts of questions that have nothing to do with literary studies and really relate to other fields that are just waiting to be asked and answered, right? And then perhaps if you step back and look at this from an even sort of wider angle lens, to me, one of the exciting things is really the team of people working together, you know, to have conservation scientists and archaeologists and geneticists and literary scholars and librarians all working side by side. All these people have knowledge that contextualizes and enriches the results that other folks are getting with their research. And it's impossible to make sense of what's happening, you know, without everyone on the team in some way. Literary studies and, you know, archaeology and phylogenetics, you know, all mixing together to answer these sorts of questions. So one of the exciting things moving forward is the way in which this bridges gaps. Not only is it useful to multiple fields, but it's bringing them together, folks who weren't ever really interacting before.
Well, that's really fascinating stuff. I look forward to seeing what you guys come up with
in
the future. We've been speaking with Tim Stenson, an associate professor of English at NC State. My name is Tracy Peake. You've been listening to the Audio Abstract.